If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, your friendly beacon of conservative common sense in a liberal sea of lies and deceit and emotionalism and all that stuff. Duke Brooks here. Thanks for being along. The number, as always, is 718-305-7176. This, of course, is the Wednesday, November 20th edition 2013. We are just 2 days shy of the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Later on in this show, we're going to be talking about that a little bit. We might talk about it a whole lot more 1 week from today. Last Thursday, Matthew Opalisky on the Liberty and Constitution community on conservativenationmedia.com, which airs at 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Central on Thursday nights here on conservativenationmedia.com. That was Matthew's debut show last week, and it was great. Matthew is a buddy of mine. We are both involved in the Republican Party here in Delaware, the first state. I've lived in Delaware for about 2.5 years now. Since early February of 2011, since February 2nd, 2011. That's how long I've lived in Delaware. So it's coming up on 3 years. Linda is shaking her pretty blonde head in disgust, but I digress. But in any, I'm not from Delaware. I had spent very little time here other than working at a radio station in Delaware. Starting in 2009 and up until 2011. But I'm not from here originally. I do like it a great deal. Delaware is, I think it's a very kind of warm and friendly and welcoming place, and everyone I've met here, with maybe one or two exceptions, has been very, very nice. You can't hit a home run every time. But in any event, Matthew had some ideas about the Kennedy assassination. He and I think, are on opposite, coming from opposite perspectives on that. And, he will be calling in a little less than 2 hours, about an hour and 45 minutes or so. And maybe we can kick that around a little bit. However, tonight's show, in about 13, 14 minutes, we will be hearing from Victoria Jackson. As in live from New York, it's Saturday night with Victoria Jackson and the Not Ready for Primetime Players. Remember that? I've got to be honest with you. Victoria was on the air on Saturday Night Live in the 80s and into the early 90s, I think. And after she left, I just didn't find it all that funny. But she's going to be with me tonight in during the first hour. Incidentally, the chat room is open and ready for business. But in any event, Victoria, very, very interesting person. One would think that because she works in the entertainment industry and she's still out there making films and doing stand-up comedy and recording records, she also sings and she plays the ukulele. I know a lot of people think, oh, the ukulele, ho, 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 it's a joke. No, it's not. If you're going to play any instrument well, you have to work on it. I can't play anything. I tried clarinet and guitar when I was younger. I just don't have the musical talent. You have to either have it or you don't. It's kind of like no matter how much you study, you're never going to be able to paint as well as Rembrandt. Doesn't matter how much you study. You know, if you don't have the talent in the first place, forget about it. Anyway, most people, I think, would be surprised to know that Victoria has always been a committed and is a very knowledgeable Christian. She clearly understands the Bible very, very well. And Victoria is a conservative. She is a Tea Party activist. Liberals hate the Tea Party because the Tea Party loves America, and liberals hate America. But, I mean, we all know this. This is obvious, but I digress. So anyway, Victoria and I will be speaking tonight maybe a little bit about what it's like to be a conservative in the entertainment industry. It must be a living H-E double hockey sticks. It's the only thing I mean, look, I went to two of the most liberal schools imaginable, William Penn Charter in Philadelphia, my prep school, and the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. And Syracuse and Penn Charter were both extraordinarily liberal. And it's not fun to be the only conservative surrounded by a sea of people that hate you. And let's not pull any punches. Liberals are much better at hating than conservatives are, primarily because the emotional realm is what liberals occupy. That's what they're all about. Everything about liberalism is about emotions. They cannot understand and articulate the conservative point of view, conservative ideas, conservative theory, philosophy. They can't do it because conservatives require logic and reasoning and facts and history. If you understand those things, if you understand some history, you will realize that conservatives take a close look at history and are very likely, more likely than not, in fact, much more likely than not, to observe something that has happened, understand that there are cogent parallels taking place in the contemporary realm, here on the temporal plane, as they say, excuse me, and from there make judgments based on prudence. Liberals live in the world of, gee whiz, wouldn't it be nice, the world of, I've got a theory, the world of, the laws of supply and demand really don't matter. That kind of thing. That's where why their ideas always fail. Being informed that someone is saying in the chat room, I can't hear you. I hope you can hear me now. Obviously, we're on the air. Not really sure what the difficulty is, but let's see here. That is Kathy in the chat room. And let me quickly send her a message because I don't know of any reason why I would not be audible. I can't think of a single reason why I would not be audible. But in any event, so we're going to be speaking with Victoria Jackson in the first hour. In the second hour, I will be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Steve Heil, United States Air Force, retired. Colonel Heil spent his career and his life in the defense of our country in the U.S. Air Force. And when he was retiring from the Air Force, he had a very interesting job. He was the administrator of the Rogers Commission. The Rogers Commission was charged with investigating the Space Shuttle Challenger explosion, which took place on January 28th, I think it was, 1986. If you don't remember that, shame on you. maybe you're too young to remember it. I don't know. But not only do I was watching it live as it happened on TV, on CNN. That was literally 10 years before Fox. So to me, it was a, you know, this was just devastating. However, the reason I'm having Steve on tonight is that last Saturday, which would have been the 16th of November, there was a made-for-TV movie on the Discovery Science Channel, and the actor William Hurt played the role of Professor Dr. Richard Feynman, who was a physicist and obviously a mathematical genius guy, who was one of the members of the Rogers Commission, appointed by President Reagan, to investigate why this happened. And Colonel Heil, having actually served on the commission, is going to be with us to discuss what the commission really did, whether the movie was accurate, and that sort of thing. So it's going to be very, very interesting, and I'm very, very glad that you're along. 718-305-7176 is the number. I'm sorry about any audio difficulties that might be taking place. Still don't know. You know, you can't tell when you're on Blog Talk whether you are, you know, whether you're being heard or not. There's no actual feedback loop. There's nothing like that. So you just have to kind of go on the air and sort of wing it. So we will, you know, we will have to see what we shall see. It's not us. We're not. It's not a function or factor of conservativenationmedia.com, where we start off the work week every Monday in a very big way. The show is called Inside Tennessee with David Vance. Now, even if you're not from the volunteer state, I've got a tip for you. Some of the issues that are affecting Tennessee are spreading out all over America. These include things like the Muslimization of school curricula, Common Core, rotten textbooks that are designed to kind of kick the underpinnings of our society around and starting to make people question the value of our society. Textbooks that refer to the 9-1-1 murdering terrorist hijackers as freedom fighters and referring to George Washington's army during the revolution as terrorists. I'm not making this up. I'm not making this up. Listen to Dave on Monday nights, all right? He is a veteran, and he brings his veterans' insight and some of the most informative guests to his show, Inside Tennessee, every Monday, so make sure to check it out. It is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. That is Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, right here on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You know, I've noticed the liberals don't like it when America wins. I was speaking to somebody on Facebook the other day, who had this idea that it was actually the Soviets that won World War II. Wasn't the U.S., wasn't the liberation of France and the insertion of American armies into Germany. It wasn't us defeating the Japanese virtually single-handedly in the Pacific. No, no, no. It was Stalin, that great man. It's unbelievable. There are people out there that think this. I'm not kidding. 718-305-7176 is the number. We will have Victoria with us very shortly. We are going to be taking a break in a few minutes. You know, with Victoria Jackson, almost anything can happen. So make sure that you stick around. I think it's going to be a real blast. Anyway, let's go ahead, take a quick break. Victoria Jackson on the other side. You stay right where you are.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up, like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and the worst injustice imaginable is the wrongful conviction of an innocent person. I'm Sam Thurman, host of A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. We take a look at what happens when innocent people go to jail as a result of bad evidence, wrongful prosecution, and dishonest witnesses. We use real cases of actual Americans who've been wrongfully convicted. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays 8 Eastern, 7 Central, conservativenationmedia.com.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on ConservativeNationRadio.org.
All righty, welcome back to Duke Brooks Radio for America. On ConservativeNationMedia.com, Duke Brooks here, 718-305-7176 is the number. A little Electric Light Orchestra there for your listening pleasure. Love those guys. Victoria should be with us in a few minutes. Kathy Hinners is going to be texting her. She's probably texting her right now. If you haven't listened to Kathy's show on Friday nights, you need to do so. It is great. Daily roll call. Kathy is a retired police officer from this town in New York State, actually the capital of New York State. And she and Victoria are kind of buddies. And anyway, we expect to hear from Victoria shortly. It looks like the wheels are really coming off the Affordable Care Act, or as it should be more correctly known, the Unaffordable Care Act. I have not read the entire bill. I would guess that there are less than 200 people in the entire country that have read the entire bill. It's obvious that the congressmen and the senators didn't read it. I mean, seriously, as the former Speaker of the House and Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, we have to pass the bill so we can see what's in it. And I've got to be honest with you, it would be impossible for me to imagine anyone making, especially an elected legislator in this country, a person representing her constituent, to make a statement like that. Can you believe it? It's just unbelievable. The U.S. Congress from time to time says and does utterly harebrained, boneheaded things. Every once in a while, the Congress will do something that is just incredibly stupid. But I can't think of anything that rises to the level, or rather, excuse me, sinks to the level of Nancy Pelosi's idiotic statement that we have to pass the bill so we can see what's in it. Utterly and completely absurd. This, I mean, seriously, come on now. This is obviously the actions and the statements of a person who is just an incredible doctrinaire liberal. And that is something that Victoria Jackson is not. Victoria is not a doctrinaire liberal. You're not a doctrinaire liberal, are you, Victoria? Victoria, are you with me? I have her on the board here, and I have her call potted up, but I don't hear Victoria. Victoria, are you with me? Well, you know, I'm presuming as soon as she is ready, she will join us and say something on the air. We're having some strange problems tonight. I'm not really sure what the story is. I'm going to blame it on Blog Talk Radio. Victoria, can you hear me? I cannot hear you. No, I don't. Got to be honest with you. I don't fully comprehend what's going on here with Victoria. I see her. Caller, you're on the air. I recognize her number. I don't know why she can't hear me. So I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, we were the doctrinaire liberals. Liberals have a belief system, and they have a value system, and they have central defining tenets in their thinking, quote, thinking, unquote. It's really about the only thing you can call it. It's not really thinking. Liberals are all about emotions and feelings and everything. And, I remember last year, media, at least the internet, was circulating a story around that Professor Dr. blah, blah, blah at the University of Wayne, professor of psychology, had put out some kind of a paper or a statement to the effect that conservatives engage in what he called low-effort thinking. And this went all over the internet. It probably got on MSNBC because, as you're aware, MSNBC is not a news network. MSNBC is an opinion network. It is strictly editorial, strictly opinion, with newscasts at the top and bottom of the hour thrown in for good measure. Speaking of newscasts, incidentally, we will be hearing from Jeff Holtzman at Talk Radio News Service in Washington in just, about 36 minutes from now, at the top of the next hour. Victoria dropped. I hope she's going to call back. I don't know why I couldn't. All right, yeah. Thank you, Kathy. Kathy says that she will call back, and I'm glad of that. But in any event, when you think about the absolute absurdity of liberals accusing conservatives of being engaged in low-effort thinking, this is what would have been referred to a while ago as the pot calling the kettle black. It's even worse than that. Liberals will look at a surface issue. They will quickly emote a surface response, and they will ignore all other factors. The gun debate, health care, all those things, those are good examples. Let us see if Victoria's with us. Can you hear me now, Victoria? Okay, we are obviously having some pretty serious problems with Blog Talk tonight. I'm being informed by Kathy Hinners that Victoria says that the phone keeps ringing even though I have answered it. Let's give this another try. See if I can bring Victoria up. Victoria, can you hear me? No, I can't hear her, and, you know, I guess she can't hear me. Well, that's Blog Talk. You know, that's Blog Talk. I have no idea what, you know, and people all over the Internet that use various different platforms other than Blog Talk, such as Live365 or even Spreaker or TalkShoe, some of the other ones, they all say the same thing to me. Why are you still on Blog Talk? It's terrible. Okay, well, it does have some technical problems that just continue to crop up. It seems every show there is something that goes wrong on Blog Talk, and sadly, this is one of them. Anyway, we are about 26 minutes now after the hour. 718-305-7176 is the number, and I am really eager to get Victoria on the air, but obviously Blog Talk Radio has some problems. We are probably going to migrate over to Live365 at some point early in the year. Michael Smith and I have been talking to those folks. A lot of people have recommended it. They have some features that are better than Blog Talk's features. Let's see if we've got Victoria now. Can you hear me now, Victoria? I can't hear you. All right. Well, you know, I don't know what to tell you, folks. I hope that this doesn't happen when Lieutenant Colonel Steve Heil calls in, which is going to be in about 40 minutes, shortly after the top of the second hour. Very, very disappointing. Victoria and I have been speaking on the phone for the last week, trying to get this together, and now she's, you know, actually making the attempt to call in, and she can't hear me. You know, just informed by Kathy Hinners in the chat room, actually, saying that it just, you know, Victoria says that the phone just keeps ringing, and my acknowledgement of it by pushing the right buttons on the board here isn't doing anything. So, very frustrating, very disappointing, but hey, you know what? I'll bet that Obama has told the National Security Agency they need to intercept Victoria, keep her off the air, that sort of thing. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I mean, this is what liberals do. You know, conservatives will use the apparatus of government to fight exterior enemies of our country. Liberals and the left will use the apparatus of government to fight their own domestic political enemies. They will almost never do anything to combat external enemies. Even when the threat is real and it's right there in your face, they just, the liberals are just, when it comes to the use of the military for completely and totally legitimate reasons, liberals are very, very timid. They are just very, very timid. JFK militarily was timid. We have more than enough examples of that. The commies began building the Berlin Wall. And what did JFK do? He did nothing. He just stood there. The U.S. government wanted to try to liberate Cuba, got a bunch of Cuban expatriates together who wanted to get rid of Castro. Kennedy said, yeah, go ahead and go in. It was poorly planned, but he was the commander-in-chief. The opportunity to give air support to the actual freedom fighters in Cuba was not availed. He didn't feel like, you know, I don't know what he was thinking. And then during the Cuban Missile Crisis, he basically gave away an American prerogative. He gave away our ability to defend the Caribbean Basin and to keep the Cubans in check by agreeing that the United States would never, under any circumstances, invade Cuba. I would have told Khrushchev and Castro to go pound sand. And he basically had to do that because he sort of dithered when it was clear that there were nuclear missiles being erected in Cuba that were Soviet nuclear missiles and that were aimed at the United States. The moment those went in, the moment the CIA and the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the moment they were aware that that's what they were doing there, frankly, in my view, we should have nuked all of Russia and all of Cuba, but I digress. We've got about 29 minutes now until the top of the hour. That would have been a nightmare, no question about it, but hey, they started it. Now, one of the worst nightmares that could possibly happen to you or to any other American is being victimized by the crime of identity theft. Now, if it does happen to you, I hope it doesn't. It could take months or even longer to recover from it if you can recover at all. So here's a hint. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance and sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service, 24/7, 365. There really is nothing that comes close to LifeLock. So to protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. That's our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the LifeLock banner. The network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. Your calls, hopefully Victoria Jackson, coming up after this, so don't go away.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough. Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest. A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Eat less, eat slower, eat smarter, eat your fruits and veggies, stop eating before you're full, up your fiber, lower your calories, get off the bus early, do some gardening, do jumping jacks, take the stairs, take one, not two, take on a new sport, take a long walk home, walk instead of drive, bend, stretch, reach for the stars, climb the monkey bars, skip the fudge bars. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here? You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Well, I guess that is the way things go in the talk show host industry. You're in, you're out, hello, goodbye. I'm trying to reach Victoria, but the Blog Talk Radio call-out feature just does not work very well. BTR, I think, is, you know, I'm informed that Victoria, when she called in, it would simply ring and ring and ring, and even when I answered it, it simply would not work. So that is the problem, and I just tried calling out to Victoria using this BTR feature, and that did not work. So, sadly, I guess it's just you and me tonight, 718-305-7176. If you want to give a call, I would appreciate it if you would call in. No matter where you are, no matter who you are, I see that Robert Garding, the host of New Wise Conservative, New Wise Conservatism on Saturdays on conservativenationmedia.com is in the chat room, along with Kathy Hinners from Daily Roll Call Fridays on conservativenationmedia.com. Robert or Kathy, why don't you go ahead and try calling in, and let's see whether or not this system actually works. Maybe it's Victoria's phone, but for some reason, I kind of don't think it was, because this system is simply not working tonight. I have no idea what the deal is. But in any event, we were talking about the fact that the liberals passed the Obamacare bill. There were conservative senators who called out certain things and certain features that were not going to deliver the plan as advertised, and they were just absolutely castigated by their liberal counterparts. It is just a very, very discouraging situation when fact is suppressed in favor of politics. This looks like it's Matthew. Is that you, Matthew?
Hey, good evening, Duke. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Hello, buddy. I'm glad that that you can hear me and I can hear you.
Well, maybe it's because of our proximity to each other. What do you think of that?
Say again?
Maybe it's because of our proximity to each other, given that we're both in the small wonder.
Yes, exactly. You know, that could be the reason.
I think it was better to blame Obama.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think we're just having real serious trouble getting Victoria Jackson on the air. She did call several times and informed Kathy that it simply was not working. And but in any event, I'm very glad that you're with us because you could go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem. I dialed in and, you know, it took, you know, about as long as it normally takes to push one, get into the queue, and next thing you know, here's Duke Brooks on the other line. So it seemed like maybe it's an issue with I don't even know what the issue would be, because like I said, it seemed to work fine for me.
Well, I don't know either. You know, have you been listening since the show went on the air 38 minutes ago?
Probably since about 10 after. I was at a public forum this evening for I was at the Bridgeville Fire Hall here in Lower Delaware. We had, I guess, three or four state senators, a couple of state representatives, and some county council members. There was a public hearing in this Lower Delaware for some of our elected officials to come out and, yeah, meet the constituency and take questions, and there was about 75 people showed up. So it was a pretty good crowd, actually, and it went from I got there at about 5:30 just to hobnob and whatnot, and started at 6, and it probably went until about 7:45, and then I stuck around a little bit longer running my mouth as I normally do. So I got into the car about 10 after 8, and that's when I plugged in on my phone to listen to you, and then once I got into the house, I was able to get on the laptop and start listening. So probably since about 10 after.
All righty. Now, was this the hearing or the forum concerning the Department of Natural Resources in Delaware?
Well, DENREF did come up, but it wasn't. This was not a forum that was specific to any one topic. It was something that was planned by one of the 35th District election, what we call an ED, which would be, depending on where you're at in the country, it would be like a precinct person or one of our EDs who happens to be the president of the fire company, and another guy that's also an ED who lives in a development not far from the fire hall. They try to put these together regularly, and this is the second one they've done. First one brought in about 55 people. That was about 4 or 5 months ago, and I think it's just something that we're going to do on a regular basis. It gives people a chance to come out, you know, vent, listen to their elected officials. The elected officials can answer some questions, give some of their thought processes. And right now, our Delaware legislature is in they're on break. There's a 2-year session. They're in between the sessions right now, so they'll be going back in January. It was an opportunity for people to ask, what do you think's coming in the new session in January? What are some of your ideas? What are you going to try and push? What are the things that you're going to try to fight against? And then, again, there was some county officials there, so some of the things that maybe had to do with land use. But it wasn't the DENREC hearing that was also going on this evening that had to do with, stormwater runoff.
Well, in broad strokes, what is our predominantly liberal legislature in Dover going to be trying to impose upon us, and which of our freedoms are they going to be taking away from us next?
Well, it's interesting because here in Delaware, like I was saying, the legislative session runs 2 years. So they'll meet from January to June, and then they'll be on break, and then they'll come back for January to June. So any bill that gets introduced from January through June, even though they're on break, those bills are still live. Okay, when they come back in January, even though they didn't pass in the first half of the session, obviously the session isn't over, so those bills are still just sitting there waiting for action. There's several gun control bills that got introduced in the first half of the session that didn't go anywhere because they couldn't get the votes in committee, but they're still alive, so they'll probably be trying to work through. One of them would have been a magazine capacity limitation of, right now we don't have any limitations on your magazines here in Delaware, and the bill, I believe it's House Bill 58, would try to cap it at 10 rounds of magazine. There's another bill, House Bill 67, that has to do with school zones, basically, right now in Delaware. There's no law in the books that says you can't carry a firearm if you're doing it legally on school property, even though there's federal laws that state otherwise. Federal jurisdiction has no say. That statute, I believe it's 18 U.S.C. 922R, has been struck down several times by courts, so that even though it's on the books, it's bogus because the federal government has no authority to tell Delaware residents what they can do with their guns once they already own them, because it's not interstate commerce. So Article 1, Section 8 doesn't provide for gun control, so it's illegal, but I digress. So House Bill 67 would seek to limit your ability to carry a gun, even if you're doing it legally. Like if you had a concealed carry permit and you were going to a parent-teacher conference, you'd have to leave it in your car, which everybody knows your gun is much safer in your car than it is on your person. It would never get stolen in your car. So some of the other bills that actually, you know what, toward the end of the session, they actually floated, toward the end of the first half of the session, they actually floated, the governor did, Jack Martell, he floated the idea of increasing the gasoline tax. So I don't know if that's going to come to pass or not, but, you know, oftentimes tax increases, that's basically how Democrats campaign. I mean, that's a campaign tactic for a Democrat, is to try to raise taxes. So it wouldn't surprise me if you see something like that come through the pike. Whether or not it'll pass, I don't know, but I don't know that anything good is coming from our Delaware legislature. We talked a little bit this evening about the prevailing wage. there is a bill right now that was introduced by one of our downstate Republican representatives to scale back the prevailing wage. Basically, I think it would affect any job in the state having to do with, you know, state funding that was under $500,000, and they can't even get that through. So again, whether or not they're going to be able to do it is who knows. Get this now. There's a bill. Oh, this is crazy. Everybody talks about public unions and you know, how basically when you have a public union, when public employees are able to collectively bargain, they're basically bargaining against the taxpayers. I mean, we saw what happened down in Wisconsin with all the public union outcry. Here in Delaware, municipalities, and I believe we have 58 municipalities here in Delaware, if a municipal police department has more than 25 officers right now, then they are able to form a union and collectively bargain. Well, there's a bill that's been introduced, and I believe the number is House Bill 81, and what that bill will do, it will reduce that threshold down to 3, and it will also include fire and rescue. So if there's any more than 3 police, fire, or rescue people in a municipality, they can together collectively bargain and become a union unto themselves. 3 people, 3 employees. So you can have a chief of police, a deputy, and a road officer. I live in Greenwood. I'm in the municipality of Greenwood. I live in the corporate limits. Small town. I believe we have just over 900 people as our population, you know, in the incorporated limits of the town. We have a chief of police, and we have a part-time cop, and we have a full-time cop. So that would be 3. So they could actually, if the bill was to pass, they could become their own union and collectively bargain against the townspeople for their pay. And that's crazy. It doesn't make good sense to me, but when you're throwing bones to the unions, it makes good sense for Democrats to do that because that's how they secure up their votes.
That is exactly what they do. It's buying votes. Stand by a moment, Matthew, if you would. Kathy Hinners, I think, is trying to make contact with us now. Kathy, can you hear me? Kathy? Caller? No, obviously there is something seriously wrong with Blog Talk. Now, I don't love BTR that much, but I do love conservative internet radio. You probably do also. And if that's the case, then you already know about the Grit and Grace radio show. Jennifer Meadows has been carrying the conservative message on the net for years, and now she's here on conservativenationmedia.com. So join Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, for solid American patriotism, unapologetic commentary, the latest news, and conservative analysis with a good dose of plain old-fashioned fun. That's Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Matthew Opalisky, the host of the Liberty and Constitution Community, is back with us. Matthew, thank you for calling in, my friend. If you could talk with us in an hour to tell us more about what will be going on your show tomorrow night. We're going to take a brief break now. More of your calls are coming up, so don't go away.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. Every child deserves to have access to books because children who grow up with books invariably do better in life than children who do not. How do I choose a book? Is it the cover? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual, so it's a combination of those two. The first book I remember was Captain's Courageous. When I finished that book, I had become so involved with these characters. So here's the thing. If a book's really, really impressing me and the writing is really, really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is. Because the endings of books, if it's really, really well done, that ending, that last thought should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on. Smile. Oh, honey. Is he still not smiling?
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah. Maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Now you know how nice it seems.
All righty, welcome back to Radio Free America. I just spoke with Kathy Henners, who called in off air on her home phone, and that worked. So now I'm thinking maybe it's not BTR after all. Maybe it has something to do with the network in that part of the country. Victoria and Kathy are both in the Nashville, Tennessee area, a city that I have not visited. I would really love to go there because everybody I know says that Nashville is wonderful. I think my cousins Peggy and Bill have been there many, many times, and they absolutely love it. So, you know, I do hope to go there one day. I think when we have our corporate meeting, it will probably take place in Nashville for a couple of different reasons. One of them is, why not? I mean, you know, Nashville, I think a person could have a pretty good time in Nashville. I understand that they have pretty tremendous food there, and, of course, the music is second to none in Nashville. Also, we have several live in Tennessee, Bing Fisher, David Vance, Kathy Henners. Victoria Jackson's actually becoming a pretty good friend of ours, so she's there. Matthew Opoliski and I live in Delaware. Ain't no thing. We'll go to Nashville. Michael B. Smith, our chairman and founder, is in Texas. Got another friend that may be joining us on air soon. I hope so. Her name is Lisa Moore, and she is in Dallas as well. Michael is in Fort Worth, and so we've got at least one, maybe two people from Texas who will are affiliated members of our company. One potential, one for sure. Jennifer Meadows is outside Memphis, which obviously is in the western part of Tennessee, and Nashville is in the eastern part. Robert Garding is a Hoosier. He's out in Indiana. So I think that Nashville is the right place for our corporate meeting, which I'm hoping will take place by this time next year. You know what I really want to do? In the spring, the Conservative Political Action Committee has its convention and conference in Washington, D.C. I went to it last year with Kevin, or earlier this year, rather, with Kevin Wade, and it was a blast. We had a great time, and they have a feature there set up called Radio Row, where there are conservatives like me who broadcast either terrestrially, as they say, you know, actual radio, or on the internet, and I think this year Conservative Nation Media is going to go to that. So it's going to be a very, very interesting year coming up for us on Conservative Nation Media Incorporated, conservativenationmedia.com. So we are growing, and I'm very, very happy that we are. In any event, give us a try at 718-305-7176, and let's see whether or not we can get this phone system to work. Steve Heil is going to be calling in a short while, so as I mentioned earlier, he ran the he was the administrator of the Rogers Commission, and that investigated the accident that took the lives of the seven astronauts on the Space Shuttle Challenger in January of 1986. That was a that was horrible. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen on television. I'm old enough to remember watching Lee Harvey Oswald get killed by Jack Ruby on live television. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later when Matthew Opalisky calls back in, which is going to be, I think, about 54 minutes from now, something like that, 56 minutes from now. He and I will talk about the Kennedy assassination a little bit. He and I have different outlooks on. I don't think that there was a conspiracy. I think the conspiracy was launched after the fact because government realized that they had allowed this to happen and they were embarrassed and humiliated. And you know as well as I do that government bureaucracies will do anything to prevent being exposed to public ridicule, lack of respect, loss of, you know, losing face. They simply will not allow that to happen. I suppose one of the reasons is that I would guess that most people that work for government know themselves that if they lose their government job, they will not be able to find work anywhere else. And that is primarily because government employees have a reputation for being unproductive, unmotivated. In many cases, they are people that are just not, by their nature, they're just not competent people. You know, government very often, and I think in most cases, government is the employer of last resort. If you literally cannot hold a job flipping burgers at McDonald's, or if you literally, I mean, if you've never had any kind of a real job in your life, and you're from Chicago, you can, I suppose you can become president of the United States. I don't know. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America. Duke Brooks is my name. This is conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And I'm still kind of disappointed that we don't have Victoria Jackson tonight, but Matthew Opalisky got through, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed that Lieutenant Colonel Steve Heil, United States Air Force, retired United States Air Force, will be able to be with us coming up in about 7 minutes to discuss the Challenger Investigative Commission. It should be extremely interesting. I spoke with Steve briefly earlier today, but I didn't want to get into it too much because I want the interview to be fresh, you know. Anyway, we do have Talk Radio News Service coming up in just a couple of minutes. Jeff Holtzman in Washington, you know, when you see the gaggle, Jeff Holtzman is one of the people in there, so they're getting our stuff for real. Talk Radio News coming up.
Coming to you every hour on the hour.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. A prominent government watchdog told House lawmakers today that Department of Homeland Security employees are abusing the federal overtime pay system. U.S. Special Counsel Carolyn Lerner told the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform that the abuse has cost American taxpayers millions of dollars.
It is an entrenched problem, it is a widespread problem, and it's probably going to take some sort of change in the law to solve it.
Lerner said that 7 whistleblowers have reported abuse of authorized uncontrollable overtime at 6 different DHS facilities. That has added up to about $9 million per year. AUO is a type of overtime that may be claimed when an employee works overtime due to irregular work that can't be scheduled ahead of time. There are reports that AUO has been regularly abused by employees who claim extra hours in order to watch TV or surf the internet.
There are tens of millions of dollars that are being abused. They're being stolen from the American people.
Utah Republican Jason Chaffetz. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Thank you, Jeff Holtzman, for the news. Duke Brooks here. No misunderstanding. The phone system is just not working. Kathy Hinners has done a little bit of detective work, and that's something that she is expert at, obviously being a former policeman. Etc., police lady, police woman. And fortunately, it seemed it must be a cell phone network issue down there in Tennessee. Who knows what's happening? Anyway, I am now very happy to be joined by former Lieutenant Colonel Steve Heil, United States Air Force. Steve, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. It's always good to talk to you, my friend.
Always good to speak with you as well. I'm very happy that you could make it tonight. You may have heard earlier we're having some telephone-related problems apparently centered down there in the volunteer state. However, let's bring everybody up to speed. In addition to having – how long were you the executive officer of the United States Air Force Thunderbirds flight demonstration team?
2 years. Every officer, you have a 2 year duty. You can only stay for 2 years because it's such an intense 2 years. And you know, after the, at the end of those 2 years, you really are ready to leave, you think. But after you've been gone for about 2 weeks, you want to go back and stay forever. So.
I can understand that. And now, you were not an actual pilot when you were in the Air Force, though, correct?
No, there were there were eight pilots and three support officers. I was the exec officer, basically what I did, because it was an organization like any other in the Air Force, and somebody with all the same daily requirements and personnel matters and finance and all that. And the commander leader who normally would have been running the organization, but he was out at that time flying around the country 238 days out of the year. So I really functioned as the keeping the home fires burning and making things run while they were out doing that. The advantage I had at the time, because they were flying the T-38, which had a back seat, and so I was able to go out and hop in the back seat. And I guess over those 2 years, I flew five or six full air show sequences and saw the world upside down, 50 feet off the ground, 500 miles an hour, and it was a fantastic experience.
What years were you the executive officer of the Thunderbirds?
77, 79.
Whoa. Did you and I meet at the Reading Air Show in 1978 or 79?
I was there in 70. I was there in 79.
All right, because I used to go, I went to the Reading Air Show in 76, 77, 78, and I think 79. And because I was there with Hughes Helicopters, I was allowed on the announcer stand near Air Show Center. And I spoke to the Air Force officer who was narrating the Thunderbirds' performance. And I remember saying to him at one point that, you know, something along the lines of, sir, your announcing skills are superior and you are doing a great job. And the guy smiled at me. I mean, I couldn't help but be struck how all of the Air Force and Navy pilots that they select for the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds, these are all recruiting poster people. You know, they all just look like exactly what you would think an Air Force or Naval Aviator would look like. So, you know, we may have crossed paths back then at one point. Now, after the Thunderbirds, after the Thunderbirds, what was your job in the Air Force until 1986 when they put you in charge of the Rogers Commission?
Well, when I left the team, I came back to New Jersey. I had a special duty assignment when I was assigned to IBM Corporation. The Air Force had a program called Education of Industry, and it was very selective, but they would select a small number of officers every year, and they had contracts with the big corporations throughout the country, and they would assign you to that corporation, and you literally went, and you're still in the Air Force, but your duty station was, in my case, Franklin Lakes, New Jersey, and just integrated into the corporate structure of the corporations left it. They got another free body, but it was a tremendous learning experience, to say the least. And you know, that way we were took back what was going on in corporate America as far as, you know, leadership and management and all those things, and back to the Air Force when we returned. So I was there for a year, and then I went to the Pentagon, I became the executive officer for the Air Force Director of Administration, and then I moved up to the Secretary of the Air Force and legislative liaison, and for 2 years I spent as much time on Capitol Hill as I did in the Pentagon, because we were sort of the liaison between the Air Force and the Senate and Congress, and we used to brief and party with and travel with the Newt Gingriches and the Ted Kennedys and the Strom Thurmonds and all that cast of characters. I worked for Vice President Bush for a short period of time as a military coordinator, and I moved up to be the Assistant Administrative Officer for the Undersecretary of Defense. And then in 1986, Challenger exploded in January 28th, and 3 days after that explosion, I got a call to be at the White House on a very cold Saturday morning, and 1st of February, whatever, and joined the, had an interview, hired on the spot, and President Reagan then made the official nomination, and that Monday I left the Pentagon and was gone for almost 9 months working for Neil Armstrong and Bill Rogers and Sally Ride and all those historical characters. Another life-changing experience.
Where were you? Did you watch the launch of the Challenger on TV like I did? Or?
Well, I was in my office in the Pentagon. I was talking to a friend of mine somewhere else in the Pentagon. I forget where. And he said we were talking, and most all the stations, our offices are in the Pentagon have TVs, or they did then. I'm sure it's even more so now. But I wasn't watching at the time because I was involved in some project or other. But all of a sudden, this guy I was talking to him said, "Oh, I got to go." He said, "You won't believe it, the Challenger just exploded." And so I ran in the outer office, and by that time they were just showing the first rerun, and my reaction, like everybody else's, was you couldn't believe what you were seeing, and then you didn't want to believe it, and then you had to believe it.
That's right. Yeah, I watched it live. It was truly one of the worst things that that I had ever seen on television. I just thought it was utterly and absolutely amazing. Steve, bear with
for
me.
For our generation, you know, we were there. By that time, there were two places, two things in history that were indelibly etched in your mind, and one was obviously Kennedy's assassination, and then secondly, the Challenger.
Steve, bear with me for just a moment. I wanted to pass along to all the people that our small company, conservativenationmedia.com, is growing. And none of us at the company could think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and his absolute love of America to his program, American by Design, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. I'm speaking with retired Lieutenant Colonel Steve Heil, United States Air Force, who administered the Rogers Commission that investigated the disaster in January of 1986, the explosion of the Space Shuttle Challenger. You know, Steve, when I watched that on TV, I'm a real, you know, I was a complete, like, NASA geek when I was a kid.
Yeah,
I always loved this. Yeah, exactly. I've always loved the space program. I mean, when I was in the first grade, my heroes were Gus Grissom and John Glenn and Alan Shepard, Deke Slayton, Gordon Cooper, those guys, Scott Carpenter, Wally Schirra. And my classmates' heroes were Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford and Roger Maris and Andy Etchebarren and Joe DiMaggio. And I thought, you guys are stupid. We're getting ready to go to the moon, and you're sitting around talking about the infield fly rule? I mean, I couldn't believe it. It was just unbelievable. Anyway, I'm going to take a real quick break. Steve, please hang in there with me. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Challenger and about the board that investigated the accident that took place and took the lives of 7 American astronauts. More of your calls coming up, too, so don't go away.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Great party, huh, guys?
Yeah, it is.
I do say so myself. Hey, did you know that birthday parties actually help build confidence in kids?
Yeah, I did know that.
Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Right, of course.
Yeah, I knew that. Did you know that strollers have the right of way on sidewalks?
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, that's true. Did you know that friendly kids statistically have more friends?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Obvious.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Think I knew that.
No, I didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
My name is Ruth Rusey. I volunteer with United Way, reading to children to help prepare them for a better academic future. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to this Wednesday, November 20th edition of Radio Free America. And of course, by now you know that music means that it's time to look at this day in Civil War history. 150 years ago, November 20th, 1863, was a Friday. This is from the Civil War Day by Day by E.B. Long and Barbara Long. November 20th, 1863, firing intensified at Charleston with 1,344 rounds fired. 3 men died and 11 were wounded. The North was laying siege to Charleston, South Carolina back then. Some light skirmishing occurred at Camp Pratt, Louisiana, and Sparta, Tennessee. President Jefferson Davis of the Confederate States asked General Joseph E. Johnston for more help for General Braxton Bragg at Chattanooga. President Abraham Lincoln received a note from orator Edward Everett commenting on how near the president had come, quote, to the central idea of the occasion, unquote, the day before, at Gettysburg when Lincoln delivered what has now become known as the Gettysburg Address. In reply, Mr. Lincoln said, quote, "I am pleased to know that, in your judgment, the little I did say was not entirely a failure," unquote. Interestingly, many of the newspapers, writers, and public intellectuals of the time thought that Lincoln's Gettysburg Address was, somebody described it as dishwatery. Other people said that it was laughable. Now we realize that this is probably the single greatest presidential oration in American history, and rightfully so. Steve, welcome back. And all right, so you were appointed the administrator of the Rogers Commission, and you were there basically right from the beginning. I mean, other than the chairman, former Secretary of State Bill Rogers, was Neil Armstrong appointed vice chairman at that point already, or were you there even before Neil and Sally Ride?
No, the commission had already come to Washington, and they came from all parts of the country just for an initial sort of how are we going to proceed and set the ground rules. They actually met at the White House for that, and that was about midweek. And then at the end of that week, somebody said, you know, we need somebody that can run this this thing because it's going to be all kind of correspondence and who knows where it's going to go, because nobody had any idea then how complex it was going to be or if they would ever discover the cause of the accident. So it had been officially in place about a week.
Now, the movie on Saturday on the Discovery Channel, which mm-hmm. we both watched, who was Alton Keel, and was he really kind of this bearded, balding, nebbish kind of guy? In the movie, he was portrayed as like a consummate bureaucrat, you know?
Well, I have to say that movie, it was painful for me to watch because the way all of the characters in there were portrayed was so far removed from actuality. Alton Keel was certainly not that. The guy, he was much taller. He was much much thinner. He wasn't a balding bureaucrat. He was a pretty dynamic guy. And so that character, it had nothing to do. I like Brian Dennehy as an actor, but he was a terrible choice to play Bill Rogers because Bill Rogers did not operate and function in any way, shape, or form the way he portrayed him in the movie.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, was there a lot of serious personality conflict between Dr. Richard Feynman and some of the other members of the commission?
Nothing to the extent that, again, it was portrayed to be. If you didn't know the real story or weren't alive at the time or didn't follow what was going on, you would think that it was Richard Feynman who single-handedly, along with General Catena, solved all the mysteries, did all the investigation, asked all the right questions, and that was absolutely not accurate at all. Feynman was not exactly a team player, but he was not the maverick that he was portrayed to be by William Hurt.
Well, I guess that they're looking for drama. What was General Katina like? I mean, I've seen a picture of him. He doesn't look anything like the actor Bruce Greenwood, and Brian Dennehy doesn't look anything like former Secretary of State Bill Rogers.
Well, I know. And Hurt didn't look anything like Feynman.
No.
Because, well, Feynman was much older. And he was then, as in the movie, he was dying from cancer. We all knew it at that time, but he was much older in that regard. But and everything was out of sequence, and the whole thing. One of the most dramatic real parts of the real investigation was the discovery of the O-ring as the cause of the accident, and. Of course, in the movie, they've got Feynman going to a hardware, buying an O-ring, and doing a. I was there. We had all our. We had at least 12 or 13 committee meetings and hearings, and they were all open. And they were all in the State Department auditorium where, you know, Kennedy did his famous news conferences. But it was early on that the Morton Thiokol mid-level management engineers came in and they were asking them questions, and they brought with them a little piece of the O-ring just so the commissioners could see what it was. And it was funny to watch Feynman. When it came to him, he reached over and tapped Sally Ride on the shoulder and had her pass him a pitcher of ice water. He filled up his glass, and he looked at his watch, and then he just took the O-ring piece, and he sort of flexed it and twisted it and all that, and then he put it in a glass in his ice water glass. And he timed it for about a minute, and he took it out. And that's when he discovered, because they were going through all this ambient temperature thing, and Feynman said, I think I have really found what the problem was by doing this little experiment that I just concluded. And he said, it's no wonder it didn't work, because as you can see, once it's been in the ice water, it isn't flexible, and it couldn't possibly have done the job that it had to do. And that's how we really discovered then and focused on that as the primary cause of the accident.
I was surprised that the famous Morton Thiokol engineer, Roger Beaujolais, was not depicted and his name was never mentioned in the movie at all. I mean, I thought that, you know... He seemed to me, at least, to be a central character in the breakdown in communication or the deliberate ignoring of communication between Morton Thiokol in Utah and NASA. Apparently, Thiokol recommended against launching in those cold temperatures, but correct me if I'm wrong, NASA just kind of leaned on them. To get them to reverse their negative recommendation. Is that about right?
Well, that's the way it was portrayed in the movie, but once again, that's not the way it really was. The night before the launch, there were 34 engineers at the Cape, and they always go through a pre-launch checklist, and it came to decision time. And this was a combination of Thiokol and NASA engineers, and they were debating and watching the weather, and because it is raining, and then there was ice on the gantry and on the Challenger itself, and since they were outside and their operating temperature they'd never launched in weather this cold before. And to a man in that room, the 34 engineers, both at NASA and Viacom, they all said, we're not going to launch. And then Larry Malloy said, well, okay, we've made our decision as engineers. Now let's take off our engineers' hats and put on our managers' hats, and we'll go caucus and come back in a couple hours and see what our decision is then. And that was because NASA was at a point in time, particularly with the shuttle program a couple years before that, they had decided to make the shuttle a profit center. So they were actually starting, and or had been for some time, paid big bucks by the defense and communication corporation to take their satellites and payloads into space. But they had tremendously overcommitted themselves in doing that, and they were behind times, and then they were starting to get penalized, you know, on their contracts for missing the window to put the satellite up there. And so there was a tremendous pressure on them to, from that standpoint, to get the Challenger off the ground. And that's what happened. They came back and reversed their decision as engineers. And we all know the consequences.
Unbelievable. Steve, bear with me for a moment. We're going to take a quick break here. Stand by, if you will. It's a very fascinating conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Heil about the Challenger Rogers Commission investigating board. And we're going to be back to the Colonel in a moment. Now then, I'm going to presume that since you are listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you are a conservative. I don't care if liberals listen. They might learn something, but, you know, they never do. Anyway, if you are a conservative, you love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case our leftist government in D.C. drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Now, since that's the case, you're going to want a Supply Depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That'll take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. About 26 and a half minutes left in this edition of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. More with retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Steve Heil, the administrator of the Rogers Commission that investigated the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster, coming up right after this, so don't go away.
Hey, Billy.
Yeah?
Do you want to go to the state fair?
Yeah.
Do you want to ride the roller coaster?
Yeah.
The big one?
Yeah.
The one with the reverse flip?
Yeah!
Well, you can't. You see, Billy, when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have done with it, including going to the state fair.
Oh, man.
Cheer up. This year, your parents will make it right. They're going to visit EnergySavers.gov, where they'll get tips on how to save energy and money. Then they'll add extra insulation and get a few of those Energy Star appliances. They could save hundreds of dollars a year. And you know what, Billy?
What?
They'll take you to the state fair next year.
But I want to go this year.
I know you do, Billy. I know you do. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov.
brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Molon LeBay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeBay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Henners, your host on Daily Roll Call on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Please join me each Friday as we talk about subjects like the Muslim Brotherhood, their goals, their agenda, and how it affects our schools, our law enforcement, and our communities. As a retired police officer, I'll give you an inside look into this issue and so much more. Don't miss it. Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, right here on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it. You're listening to Duke Brooks on ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Welcome back to Radio School America on ConservativeNationMedia.com. The Wednesday, November 20th edition. Duke Brooks here. 718-305-7176 is the number. And I am joined by retired Lieutenant Colonel Steve Heil, United States Air Force, who was the administrator of the Rogers Commission in Washington in 1986 that investigated the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster. Steve, obviously, and I do remember, I watched the hearings, all the ones that were televised, I watched them. And I felt like I couldn't get enough of it. And at some point, I remember Chairman Rogers, former Secretary of State, saying in public, he said something like, there has been a lot of speculation that the decision to launch on that morning may have been flawed. It is now very clear that the decision was flawed. And I guess my question is, seven Americans lost their lives that morning, including Dr. Judy Resnick, who I found out later had perfect SAT scores, 800-800. And I began thinking, we can't afford to lose people like that. Did anybody at NASA pay any kind of a penalty? Did anybody lose their jobs as a result of that flawed decision?
Well, it was sort of interesting. When they first began, President Reagan told Bill Rogers and through him the commission, we're not on a witch hunt. We don't want to hang anybody. We just want to find out what happened, and that's your charge, why it happened, and what we can do to keep it from happening again. And so we really started out, and we weren't even going to go there because we were just going to, the commission was just going to specifically look at the engineering and the mechanical parts of the and technical aspects of the Challenger and all that was associated with it. But after about the second hearing, and we got up into the mid-level management people on both sides of the curtain aisle, if I call it NASA, it became very obvious that the whole decision-making communication process within NASA was as much to blame as the mechanical failure. And I remember Chairman Rogers actually halted one of the hearings. We went back to a conference room off the stage. He called then Chief of Staff Don Regan at the White House, and he gave a very quick overview of what we discovered. He said, so talk to the president and see if he will now wants us to go in the direction of management as well as engineering. And he said, okay, the old man's down in his office. I'll get down. And he went down. He came back in about 5 minutes. And Reagan said, well, the old man said, wherever you need to go, go there. And it changed the whole complexion of the focus of the investigation from then on. Everything was done in such a collective way and by committee, and it was very difficult to actually point your finger, quite frankly, at one particular individual and say they were the ones who were culpable in this. It was many, many different people that all had a little piece of culpability. But they were under tremendous pressure to launch that thing, big piece of machinery that day.
Did you listen, I'm sure you did, to the NASA tapes, apparently from, if I remember correctly, all seven of the astronauts were still alive when the crew capsule hit the Atlantic Ocean?
Yes.
And, okay, apparently one of them, shortly, just moments after the explosion, made a comment to the effect of, we should have stayed in bed today, or something along those lines. Was that Dick Scobee, or who was it? Was it Ron McNair that said that?
It had to be I think it was Kofi, because McNair wasn't really communicating, at that point in time during that phase of the launch. They did survive it. In fact, the crew capsule is structurally the strongest part of that whole massive system that we know as the shuttle. And NASA has 134 cameras, or they did back then, who knows, as it went along. But anyway, they took camera, TV, film from every conceivable angle that you could think of for every launch. But they also had a 70-millimeter long-range TV that they could actually follow it all the way to into orbit. And first it was zeroed in right on at the time that the capsule exploded, and the crew compartment came out of that fireball intact, and it brought with us all the tubing and wiring and everything out of that long cargo bay. So it sort of tended to stabilize it, and it did just a slow 2 minutes and 36 seconds spiral down and hit the ocean, and they followed it all down. And they knew exactly where it was. And the interesting thing, and they did this in the movie, and it was very early on, they were talking about the crew being alive and they're going to hush it up, and we didn't do that. They didn't, in fact, once they determined that the crew was in no way a part of the action or responsible. They didn't actually retrieve the capsule for almost 6 weeks because they needed to find the other parts that to solve this mystery. But when they did finally bring the capsule up, they checked each of the astronauts' emergency oxygen bottles. And
Judy Resnick had turned on Smith's oxygen, correct?
Well, I don't know who turned on. I don't know how they would determine that.
She was sitting behind Smith.
Two minutes and 36 seconds of oxygen, so they knew they were breathing when they hit the water or the ocean. Of course, the impact killed them then. because there was no communication with the capsule after the explosion.
No. I'm sure the radio antennas were destroyed. At what altitude did the explosion take place? Was it like 30,000 or something, or where was it?
They were higher now. I think they were at about 13 miles, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh. All right. So they were up above the atmosphere, basically.
Yeah, they were. They had just gone through that real buffeting stage as they were approaching, you know, going out of the atmosphere, and that's when they then throttled up, and that's when they exploded. So
that, there is film that the moment the SRBs ignited, the solid rocket boosters, the one on the right is the one that had the O-ring failure.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment it ignited, there was a puff of black smoke that came from one of the O-rings. And I suppose if somebody at NASA had seen that and noticed it, I mean, they would have had less than 70 seconds to act on it. But if someone, either at Kennedy or in Houston, had started screaming, RTLS, RTLS, return to launch site, they could have separated the orbiter vehicle from the external tank and the SR solid rocket boosters, and in theory, they could have come back to the skid strip at Cape Canaveral. But, the puff of smoke only lasted for about half a second, and then it was gone. And, I guess there's really no way to Monday morning quarterback something of that nature. But what a horrible disaster. Now, parenthetically and by coincidence, the commander of the first post-Challenger flight was Rick Hauck. And mm-hmm. I met Rick Hauck in Tampa in 1981 when I was learning how to fly helicopters down there. And my instructor and I had flown my helicopter to Tampa from Gainesville, and we went into the FBO and got food or, topped it off or whatever we were doing. And here was this guy standing in a phone booth at the airport, and he was wearing that distinctive NASA kind of a royal blue jumpsuit and Ike jacket that they were wearing. And I struck up a conversation with this guy and talked with him, and his name was Rick Hauck, and this was in 1981, obviously 7 years before he commanded that post-Challenger mission, but I didn't have my rating at the time, so I asked my instructor to take Rick flying in my helicopter, and Jim Smith did, and Rick was a great guy. Then, flash forward to about 1989, 89, maybe 90, I think. Anyway, I was with Carol Ramsey at the time, who was a flight surgeon in the 512 at Dover, and she said, okay, let's go to our dining out evening, which, as you know, is kind of a semi-formal Air Force tradition where people wear their formal Air Force uniform, very dress uniform. And Rick Hauck was the guest. Okay. Rick Hauck was the featured guest that evening. And as he came in, we were at Dover Air Force Base, and he and his wife and I guess his family came in with him. And I said, Mr. Hauck, and he turned around, he looked at me, and I said, sir, do I look at all familiar to you? And he said, no, not really. Well, wait a minute. Did we fly together? and I told him the story of Tampa, and he was like, oh, yes, I do remember that. And then he said something like, it was the only time in my life I've ever flown a helicopter. And it was a wonderful night. And obviously Rick Hauck is a very serious pilot and astronaut. Have you ever met him?
Yeah, I met him. I met most of the active astronauts and some of the retired ones over the course of those almost 8 months that I was involved with the investigation. So, yeah, I met him.
Steve, thanks so much for being with me tonight.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Okay, I hope that we'll be speaking again soon, and you have a wonderful evening, and thank you so much for your insight, and of course, thank you for defending my country. I appreciate it.
Well, it was an honor to be part of our military, and
absolutely.
I am deeply saddened by this state in which it's been taken now, but this isn't
me both.
Time for me to be political.
I understand. Well, we'll be discussing all that on the air at some point very soon when I have
I'm
you
sure.
back on. Thanks very much, Steve. Have a great evening.
Okay,
my
dude.
Friend.
Thank you.
See you soon. What a great guy. All right. Matthew Opalisky is holding a brief break, and then Matthew's going to fill us in on what's going to be happening tomorrow night on his program, Liberty and Constitution Community. Right after this break, stay right where you are.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Dave Vance inviting you to join me every Monday night for Inside Tennessee on conservativenationmedia.com. Even if you're not from the volunteer state, you'll want to know what's happening because one day it will affect you. Every week you'll hear interviews with experts, legislators, and citizens who are fed up and making a stand. So join us every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central Time for Inside Tennessee on conservativenationmedia.com.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
All right, welcome back. About 6 minutes left on this edition of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Matthew Opalisky joins me. Matt, welcome aboard again, my friend. How you doing tonight, pal?
Hey, good evening, Duke. Pretty good show. I was glued to my radio or to my laptop listening to that story about the Challenger. I remember I was young when it happened, but I mean I still remember it. And I remember watching it on TV and seeing, you know, it was a pretty amazing thing. And I just watched a documentary on the investigation after the fact, and pretty interesting stuff. So I was a pretty interesting guest. So
yeah,
we're gonna roll into tomorrow night
guy.
Into the. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying Steve is a great guy, and obviously he was the administrator of the Rogers Commission. And, you know, you mentioned you were young when that happened, and, you know, my outlook is that's the trouble with you young kids today. But I digress. In any event, what is going to be happening tomorrow night on Liberty and Constitution Community?
Well, we're getting flamed from all over the place. So tomorrow night, I don't know if you've heard or if some of your listeners are aware, but we're going to make them aware tomorrow night. I don't know if you've heard, there's a movement that's going around called the 28th Amendment. It's called the Trayvon Amendment, and it has to do with a gaggle of folks out there that are petitioning. They're trying to
repeal the Second Amendment, and they've got a bullet point list of 12 things that are going to comprise this so-called Trayvon Amendment, where they want to basically strip your right to own firearms. So we're going to cover that. I'm going to read through that entire amendment proposal, and then we're going to debunk it and throw flames on it and stuff it under a rock somewhere. So that's what we're going to talk about in hour one. We're going to definitely touch on the Kennedy assassination. Again, I know you and I are maybe not on the same page on that, but we're going to talk about we're going to talk about the House Select Committee on Assassinations that, you know, for all intents and purposes, back in 76 to 78, and then when the final report was issued in 79, I mean, they didn't come right out and name people, but they definitely said that there was a conspiracy. Now, they said that, well, it didn't have anything to do with Castro. It didn't have anything to do with Cuba. They thought they ruled out the Soviet Union. They ruled out the mob. But they did say that, you know, in all probability, it was a conspiracy. There were four shots. The fourth shot missed. And if there were four shots, then there had to be a second shooter. So, I mean, I don't really point to Congress much, but, you know, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, they did, you know, this was based on scientific evidence. And then in hour two, I'm going to have a guest, a friend of mine that used to be down in Louisiana who's now over in Oklahoma, a gentleman by the name of Jeremiah Savoy. He owns and operates Savoy Leather, and he does custom leather works. He does holsters. He just moved to Oklahoma. His business is growing so much that he had to move out of state to another shop, a bigger shop. And he's a pro Second Amendment guy like myself, a small business owner that's starting to turn big. His holsters are starting to be featured in a lot of gun magazines. Work is coming in like crazy. So, again, he's growing, so he's going to be with me in hour two. And, you know, he's welcome to hang out and talk as long as he's interested in. So we're going to, like I said, we're going to roll in hour two with a guest, Savoy Leather. You can find him at savoyleather.com. Some of the pictures of his holsters, it's unbelievable. I actually have one on order. He's backed up because it's quality work, and he does. It's a one-man show. He's doing each holster, you know, one at a time, carving them by hand. He's got some holsters that are like in his store. Then you can send him an image, and he'll make it. I mean, you want to look at some of the stuff on his website. It is truly artwork, but it's functional at the same time. So that's what we're gonna cover all that tomorrow night. It's 10 o'clock till midnight Eastern.
Fantastic. I always look forward to hearing from you, whether it's on the air or whether it's at a meeting of our local Sussex Republican Committee. You're going to the Christmas dinner, aren't you?
Yeah, down there at Baywood. Yep. As a matter of fact, I talked to a couple people tonight that I'm trying to get committed to buy tickets.
All right, fantastic. We've got about a minute and a half left, but I'm so glad that you put so much stock and you find so credible the House Select Committee on Assassinations, because as we all know, the U.S. House of Representatives is never wrong about anything.
Well, dude,
right?
in my defense on that one, these were not House members. Now, House, it's like, you know, it's funny, I saw something today. It said pro is the opposite of con. So what's the opposite of progress? Would be Congress, right? And, you know, how about that?
Ah, there you go.
But, look, these weren't House members that were doing this investigation. This was, you know, this was a group of scientists. This wasn't the Warren Commission. These weren't, like, hand-picked political junkies or political hacks like Arlen Specter.
Right.
These were scientists that dissected this stuff, so.
Well, we'll have to talk about this, who knows. One thing is clear, President Kennedy is dead. He doesn't deserve to be dead, I don't think. I do think that he is now an overrated president specifically because of what happened to him.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
All right. All right, buddy, this is it. Thank you for being along tonight, and I look forward to hearing from you tomorrow. And that'll do it for me. Thank you very much for being with me tonight, and I look forward to speaking with you next Wednesday, same time, same place, Radio Free America.